Good morning. It is 9:23 a.m. We are here today, December 9, 2015, in the OPA Hearing Room, Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Hagatnya, Guam, for the formal hearing of OPA PA 15009, Corando Corporation versus Department of Public Works. Presiding over the hearing today are Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Yuka Hechanova, Tirza Bagana, and Michelle Brillante. Will Appellant Corando Corporation please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Madam Auditor and Mr. Camacho. Present with me are, to my right, is my co-counsel, Mr. Fitzgerald.
Morning.
And our assistant, Ms. Fitzpatrick.
Good morning.
And the Corando's institutional representatives present are Mr. Kim and Mr. Han, Mr. Byung Kim and Mr. Dennis Han.
Good morning.
And my first witness is here too, but is it okay if he sits through opening argument?
No.
Okay.
We'll get to exclusion of witnesses, but I'll formally do that before the argument.
Okay. I'm sorry?
Who's the first witness?
Mr. Ho with Cortec.
Okay. So I think we need to escort him down.
Okay. Should I be for tears to him down?
Who are your institutional reps again? I'm sorry.
Mr. Kim and Mr. Hong.
Mr. Dennis Kim?
Yes, and Mr. Byung Hong.
Byung
Kim. Excuse me. Byung Kim and Mr. Dennis Hong.
Will purchasing agency Department of Public Works identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, Tom Keeler. I'm an assistant attorney general with the government of Guam. Also present is Rob Weinberg, also an assistant attorney general.
Does he want to come up forward? We can try to squeeze him up. Or you can bring your chair up.
Representing the Department of Public Works is the director, Glenn Leon Guerrero. The deputy director is not able to be here as he's advises he's under, pursuant to a public law, required to be on a selection committee for the Simon Sanchez High School Committee $100 million bond. Mr. Joaquin Blas is not able to be here, but will be available all day tomorrow. Carl Dominguez, the prior director of the Department of Public Works, is apparently outside also. We also have consultants of the Department of Public Works. I don't know if you want me to list those.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, we had a little discussion off the record before we started. We were just exploring the possibility of settlement. It did not appear that that was possible, so we're going to proceed with the hearing. Also, we had a preliminary issue raised by the purchasing agency. Mr. Taylor, you may proceed on that for the record.
Thank you. Again, I would like to state that in the filings, for the very first time, Corando, in its hearing brief, has raised the issue of the government's ownership of a small section of property that's required for the rights of way and in order for it to move forward with the project. The brief has a number of exhibits, and it attaches a security title document that is dated December 7th, 2015. This was seen for the first time as of the date of the filing. This was filed right before the hearing. It was filed with the government being unable to respond in a proper manner. There is a declaration of taking. The funds have been filed with the Superior Court. certifications of title have been made, and that should be the end of the inquiry. I don't think we should be discussing a security title document as whether or not that documents ownership. There should also be a list pendants. That would be the standard procedure for the government of Guam. The list pendants is not reflected in the security title document. I believe that there absolutely is a list pendants. I wasn't able to access records yesterday. I wasn't able to access staff. It was a holiday. And I simply do not have the opportunity to be able to respond to this, and I view it absolutely critical. I think we've been blindsided by it, and it's inappropriate. But, again, I think we're entitled to an extension in order to allow us to do a response. We have to be able to address a new claim. If we don't, it's completely prejudicial to us, puts us in a bad, bad situation with respect to an appeal that we know is going to be filed, assuming the OPA rules in our favor. Again, I don't know how we're able to defend something without having been able to prepare for it and without having had notice of it.
Okay, but this tank, you want to respond
sure.
to that issue?
Thank you. First and foremost, it's not a new issue. If you go to their rebuttal, to Karanda's response, page 4 of 10 specifically says, responding to one of Karanda's arguments about the right-of-way, Mr. Keeler misrepresents. He says, Karanda was not diligent in the time taken to obtain the building permit. Okay, wait, easily. He says, the 3 months fall period following the NTP was unrelated to the acquisition of right-of-way. Instead, it's a general time frame needed to secure all required signatures. I have made the Karanda had, in this motion, had raised the issue, not a motion, our response to the agency report about the right-of-way. That was response to it. We had Sunshine Act, all right-of-way documents. None of the court documents were provided. And I will put that under oath. Ms. Fitzpatrick checked it 3 times. I've checked it 3 times. And I welcome Mr. Keeler to testify and tell him that he produced it.
Well,
none of those documents were prepared.
Mr.
Were
Keeler
given
is
to
not
us.
Going to testify today. Mr. Keeler is representing the government here. But I don't think...
But the bottom line
okay.
is this. It is part of the practice of covering up. And the evidence will show that there was a reason why they didn't produce it to us. And I will have testimony on that.
Okay,
and so why don't we let the testimony go? I think you can decide that point. It is improper. There's no claim. What claim is he talking about? Either they met a requirement of the law to acquire right away at the start, or they didn't. But if they did, they did. It's non-issue. Why would anyone appeal that? On the other hand, if they didn't follow the procedures, maybe that's what they're covering up. That is an issue, and isn't that a pattern? And I think we have a right to explore that. That issue was right before them, and we have another issue of cover because they never produced the documents in response to the Sunshine Act. So I think that this is ridiculous. This
okay.
this information should was available. This is not a surprise. And frankly, I think Mr. Fitzgerald called him yesterday. He didn't respond. He had any questions about it. He could have talked to him about it. He could have emailed me. He didn't. So... there's no surprise. I think we need to go forward.
Well, at this point, I know you're raising this.
One more thing, just for I read from the wrong page. For page 3, Mr. Fitzgerald,
of your rebuttal?
Of DPW's rebuttal to Karanda's
okay.
response. It says,
For example, Carondo assumes that the 3-month period from DPW's March 11, 2014 notice of intent to award and issuance of the notice to proceed was because, quote, the governments need to complete the acquisition of land for the right of way is wrong. Directly at issue.
Could I please comment?
Sure.
Okay.
Briefly, please.
Yeah, I take offense to the issues as to cover up. First, the declaration of taking that wasn't brought up. Secondly, the reference, the response to...
You don't need to argue cover up at this point. I know she's arguing cover up, but there's no... there's no finding of cover up. You have the opportunity to argue that at the closing.
Okay. But the issue wasn't raised. It was just simply an assumption, unfounded assumption in Carondo's filing stating, we assume that it was to get the right-of-way. Complete it. That's incorrect.
Okay, you but is not, it a fair characterization when she cites page 3 of DPW?
It's an unfair characterization. Okay.
No, but did you actually state those words in your rebuttal?
My rebuttal said, No, it takes 3 months to sign the document. It's gov-wom. That's what I said. That doesn't go to, okay, therefore... titles at issue. It doesn't. She had an assumption. I explained to her why it wasn't correct. The other thing is, this doesn't have anything to do with the FOIA request. This isn't the forum for that.
Okay, but you can still... All right. She seems to raise that in her testimonial presentation today.
Absolutely.
You can still raise the formal objection at that point. I'll rule on it, but right now...
I think it is, because again, we're in a proceeding with new documentation, new claim that we're unprepared for.
Okay, my ruling will be, or is, that you're going to have I'm going to reserve basically the ruling until she tries to, or attempts and seeks to bring that into evidence during these proceedings. Mr. Keeler, you will have the opportunity to raise a formal objection at that point, okay? And also you'll have the opportunity to argue against whatever those issues are in your closing, all right? But I'll let you, like I said, we'll see how the evidence is presented. And we'll go forward there. But you certainly will have the opportunity to raise what objections you have concerning evidence concerning this alleged new issue. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Now, any other preliminary matters before we go forward?
Will Mr. Felix Benavente be available? At the last hearing, I believe Mr. Keeler represented that they would be available, so I didn't subpoena taking him on his word.
Okay. Is Mr. Benavente here?
I already addressed that. I would also...
Oh, okay. He can be available in the next 48 hours. Is that correct?
He can be available. He'll be here. To be here at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay. Were you planning on calling him as your first witness?
No, but I just need you to know that he's available.
All right.
Thank you.
And are there any witnesses in the room from either party? No?
All right.
So pursuant to the scheduling order, we will then proceed with the hearing. The first part of the hearing will be the opening statements. And, of course, this is just what counsel believe the evidence will show. This is not the closing arguments, as you well know. And Ms. Kang, you have your first up.
Thank you. Good morning. As you well know, this is a project. This is an appeal from the decision of the agency, DPW, to terminate Carondo Corporation from the construction project involving the people under the River Bridge. It was a project to construct 2 new replacement bridges, Mobility Bay and Peabody Bay. And they're too late, for those of you who are familiar or not familiar, it's a 2-lane bridge. Very narrow, and approximately, I believe, about 60-foot span each. And they're pretty close to each other. You can, when you're standing on one, you can see the next one. And at the Piqua, you can see Joe and Joe's is right at Piqua Bridge. So that's sort of the location. And these bridges were initially, the original bridge was built in 1930. And that's pretty much fallen apart over time. And there have been numerous, fixings, but the first time it was really fixed, I think it was in 2010, when they built what is a steel bridge over the existing 1930 bridge. And we may call those bridges existing steel bridges. Some of the consultants call them jump bridges, so these bridges are what the traveling public are using. And those are dilapidated, they're unsafe, and they need replacement. You know, right-of-way was an issue from the beginning because the bridge required a little more space around the sides and the length and the work area. So you need to acquire, for any kind of construction project, you need to acquire right-of-ways or properties if it's going to be permanent, or easement if you're just going to use it temporarily. Not easement to access agreements, and then you might have easements for utilities. In this case, right-of-ways were needed to be acquired for the property as depicted in the construction plans. And in this case, they acquired most of them, and there were two that were left in 2013.
Can I object for the record? This again goes to a right-of-way certification that wasn't raised until the brief. Government had no notice of this. We're perfectly willing and prepared to respond, but I need to be able to have a few days in order to provide the documentation and to properly address it.
Okay, those are just opening statements, Mr. Keeler, but okay. We do note your objection.
Thank you.
I'm going to overrule it this time because the opening statements, of course, are not evidence, as you well know. But they're just a presentation or a brief summary of what we expect the evidence to show. But please proceed.
Thank you. So two right-of-ways had yet to be obtained before the bid went out. This was right before 2013, at the end of 2013. Now, let's talk about the bid. The invitation for bid went out in late 2013. It was advertised in the fall of 2013. The submission of the bond, the deadline under the invitation to bid, was December 3rd. And with that, there was a right-of-way certification that Mr. Keeler attached to his brief, which was Exhibit D, as in dog, to his rebuttal to Caranda's response. And that certification was a right-of-way certification. And in that certification, he represented, Mr. Dominguez, then the director of DPW, represented that there were two lots yet to be obtained, two rights-of-way, and that he would obtain them within 60 days of December 2nd, 2013. So off they went, and the project began. Submission of bonds was due in December 3rd. Right-of-way certification went in, and it was on December 2nd. I believe that was part of what was needed to obligate the funds. And one of the lots that was referenced in that right-of-way, again, Mr. Keeler's Exhibit D to DPW's rebuttal, was lot number 150-R3-1RW. And interesting enough, under the regs, which also Mr. Keeler provided, DPW's right-of-way regs, DPW is supposed to certify that they obtained the property before they advertise. So interesting enough, the certification, again, that's attached as Exhibit D, which is rebuttal, came after the advertisement. The bid was submitted by various parties on January 15, 2014. Two bidders, Caranda and IMCO. Caranda was the low bidder at 3.5 $6 million or thereabouts, $6.8 million. I believe IMCO's was in the $4 million range, low $4 million range. So they didn't get it. And the bid was open on February 12th, and award was on March 11th, 2014. Based on our review, there's still no right-of-way acquisition for those two lots at that time. The contract was signed on June 10th, 2014. When I say signed, complete signature, as you all know, both know that it circulates for all the department heads to sign. So the governor, being the last person to sign, signed on June 10th, 2014. I will address what I think the evidence will show that there were delays to the issuance of the MTP in order to proceed. The addendum 1 to the contract states, in response to question 5, what is the time from the issue of the issuance of the MTP? From the date of bid opening. Bid opening again was February 12, 2014. So they said it was 6 months. August, okay, great. Well, we all know the MTP didn't come out until 11 months later, in January 2015. So the delay, Carondo's position, and the evidence will show that there was a delay in issuing the MTP because, one, there were right-of-way issues, and two, there were archaeological issues that were issues that the government had to deal with, not Carondo. Now, just interesting enough, nowhere in the bid document was Carondo told that this property had not, one of these critical properties, had not been acquired. This is actually a requirement of the law. Based on documents I obtained yesterday, the taking was actually on September 11, 2015. 14, excuse me. So,
wait, I'm sorry.
2014. The taking of the remaining right of way, lot 150.
Okay, 2015 or 2014?
2014. Thank you. Excuse me. September 11th, 2014. That was when it was filed in court. This was not documents that Mr. Keeler provided. And this was clearly beyond the 60 days that the right of way certification stated. That was submitted to the federal government. Carondo did planning work before the MTP was issued. They had a pre-con meeting, they worked on getting some of the work done, and even got its alternate phasing plan reviewed, approved, moving forward, before the MTP. Now, just so the evidence will show that the work before an MTP is at contractor's risk. If a contractor, the contract is, if an MTP is not issued, it's terminated, the contractor is out of luck. And so there's a lot of risk, but Carondo, you know, took some risk and got things moving. Building permit, like for instance, it got its building permit on October 30th, 2014. And when NTP was issued, began a lot of the planning work. Again, we're talking about a horizontal work, not vertical work. Vertical work, building buildings, once you get the building permit, you go dig up your ground, do your civil work, do your foundation. Vertical, horizontal work, especially when it involves seaside property, you know, you always have archaeological. There's a lot of things you have to deal with. There's a lot of planning. And while the contractor can, at his own risk, do a lot of that before MTP, he's not required contractually, and it would be at his option. So all of the planning requirements were completed on February 18, 2015, when it submitted and got approved with DOA, Department of Agriculture's HACCP plan. So it's a hazard. I'll get the full name for you. But it's the last plan. That was basically the last check. And it was ready to break ground. Unfortunately, the consultant, the construction manager, Stanley, who was overseeing the project, the chief resident consultant on this project, didn't get back to, received it, but didn't respond until March 5th, 2015. So they sat on it for a while until Stanley approved it. And they came back with exceptions, no EAN, no big deal. Then they could set up what is called a DOA meeting at the site, which happened the very following day, March 5th. And then you can break ground. So Columbus started work after that. What has been briefed heavily is the issue of the submittal logs.
I'm sorry, the issue?
The issue of the submittal logs.
Thank you.
The submittal log it tells a story. It's a living document. What it allows people to do is to audit on the work. You understand, you know each and every event that happened and the documents related to it, the supporting documents and related documents. It's a living document. It gets updated. It gets, you know, all the references are in there. Much like a good example would be, like, you know, so when someone like myself wanted to conduct a construction audit, I can go to Submitlaw and look at what happened during the course of the project. Like when you conduct a forensic audit of financials, you need to go to ledger, the general ledger. If something's missing, how do you know? That's the hard thing. It has to be accurate. It has to, any changes has to be recorded and explained. You don't delete information. And it needs to be audible. When you delete information, it changes the story. When the stories change, then who knows what's gone, what's missing, and what happened. And when you're talking about millions of dollars in liability, it's important. You don't delete documents. The evidence will show Stanley deleted 4 critical submittals. Now, one of the most important submittal in this hearing is what we've called the alternate phasing plan. The phasing plan is like a battle plan. You have a plan, you go to battle, and you send your soldiers out there, and you fight. I'm sure it's not quite that simple, but something like that. But the alternate phasing plan is how Caronda was going to execute his work, prosecute his work. It was going to build, because of load, it observed visual load conditions. Like these jump spans, the existing temporary steel bridges aren't going to hold our crane. We should build a temporary bridge. And, you know, this will allow single mobilization where you can use both sides of the road at the same time. Because the existing roads still travel, you can still travel, you just can't run your crane and equipment, but regular cars can. So you can, you know, it's, when you do your pilings, you go back and forth on each end of the bridge. And it was efficient, save time, save money. It was a win-win for everybody. And it was a good plan. It was a good battle plan. It was a good for the project. Nothing changed with respect to the construction. The pilings, number of pilings didn't change, the location of pilings didn't change, the construction joints didn't change. The abutments don't change. I mean, the hard stuff, none of that changed. It was just the means and method. And more importantly, the construction plan specifically allow the contractor explicitly to come up with an alternate phasing plan. That was a given. So this discussion of termination began in February 2015, 2 months into the project. This, for me, is quite surprising and shocking, considering how much delays you have on long projects, road projects, bridges, but more importantly, on a bridge project when you have so much planning involved. And by February, they had gotten everything ready to go. February 18, 2000, they got their HAP, CCP plan ready to go. They're ready to mobilize. And they began grubbing only after Stanley approved the HACC plan on March 15th. So, and they cleared the property and whatnot. But for some reason, in March, there was this effort to terminate Carondo. Now, coincidentally, during that month, March 1st, when, in March 1st, Stanley took the alternate phasing plan submittal, and which was approved in October, which was reviewed in October, approved in November. In March, 4 months later, said, well, we're going to restart the review process on this earlier approved submittal. Out of the blue. The battle plan has changed. You get a new battle plan. So what do you do when you get a new battle plan? You have to make new plans. And typically, a contractor would get additional time to review and review the request and address and respond. And the cycle takes a while because it was a 13-point list with multiple plans and referring to multiple submittals. So it wasn't like correct this on one page, whatnot. Submit this plan. It referred to three key submittals in there that had to be changed. There was a huge amount of work required in that. March 1st. That's a very important date, March 1st, 2015. The battle plan changes. Carondo saying, okay, I thought I was approved. Now we're revisiting this issue. Fine. This threw the project off track. No, he's up, my staff. He's giving me some documents. Thank you. This threw the project off track. Stanley was quite sneaky about this. In March, minutes of the meeting of March 10, 2015, the previously approved submittal of the alternate phasing plan on November 4th disappeared from the submittal log. At the same time, there's letters, in 2 weeks following that, there are letters from the department saying, you're 40 days behind. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? The evidence will show that there was an effort. They, for whatever reasons, they wanted to terminate. And that at that point, to support that decision, that the records had to support it. So the previously approved battle plan had to be gone. There's a new one. But they didn't give them enough. They didn't say, here's some time to do it. Follow through with a letter saying, hey, you're behind 40 days. Don't you know? The evidence will show that made it very difficult for Carondo to prosecute his work in the manner that they had planned. Stanley Consulting was not diligent, and they were very sloppy in the review of these critical submittals, sometimes by as much as 4 months, as in the case of this particular, the alternate phasing plan submittal. When you are executing and prosecuting a project and you have something approved and you're moving forward with it, somebody months down the line says, well, oh no, you got to do it some other way. You got to stop. And you got to see how is that, what other activities are related. You stop what you're doing. You have to go out there and, you know, respond to all that. Get more submittals, get more planning, get more reports, stop work. That was the interference. One of the things I learned a long time ago when I first worked on the construction project from an architect, he said to me, one of the most important factors to a successful project is that everyone has to be loyal to the project. You do your work, but you also have to be loyal to the project. And deleting records, sloppy reviews, and late reviews, and subsequent cover-ups, the evidence will show that they failed to provide important information to contractors. As you consider the testimony presented today, I ask that you ask yourself, Where was their loyalty? Who were they protecting? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tang. Mr. Keeler, your opening statement?
Yes, thank you. Just going to address a couple items first. The Department of Public Works' focus was not to terminate Corando. The department's focus was to get the project completed. Only after it became evident or signs that Corando was not able to do it did the director in early March notify the Guam Transportation Group. And the Guam Transportation Group is composed of a number of experts. Parsons Transportation Group, which is only client is the Department of Public Works, Parsons Brinkerhoff, and a number of representatives that are at that are composed of that board. Those individuals meet each and every Friday unless there's a holiday or for whatever reason they're not able to, but they regularly meet. The evidence will show they regularly meet at least 3 to 4 times a month, okay? And the director is not a construction manager. He's not an engineer. So all he can do is take a look at a project and see there's no activity. So when he expressed a concern in early March, that would have been 60 days after the notice to proceed, and it would have been expressed in the Guam Transportation Group's regular meeting.
March of 2015.
60 days following the notice to proceed. He expressed a concern. He had stated, you know, if they don't start working, I'm thinking of terminating. The question is, did he terminate? No. He's got a panel of experts that he serves, that serve as a resource, serve as counseling, and have the expertise. And in that early March 2015 meeting, they counseled him no. The testimony will show that they counseled him no. You know, this is too early. There's float time in the project. They've had problems with getting some of their approvals, you know, and that we should do what we can to facilitate it, okay? Therefore, there was a letter, March 19th, that was written saying, Corando, we're a little concerned. Let's get together. Let's have a meeting. Let's start seeing how we can get this going. Each and every following Friday meeting, the status of the Billy Pigwood project was reviewed. And the evidence will show, on a regular basis, the response was little activity. There isn't a lot going on. The director initially stated in March, early March, it took 4 months for the director and the Guam Transportation Group to endorse the termination, simply because Corando wasn't competent. And it's not that they're not competent, because they work on another project, Route 25, Route 26, okay? That also had issues to do with power lines. And the plans called for the relocation of those power lines, and it was a non-issue. The testimony will show that on that one project, they've got a competent project manager. They didn't have one on Billy Pigwa. The ongoing requests for information, the ongoing requests for submissions were never answered, never responded to. With regards to the October 27th submittal that is again characterized as one of the critical submittals and is stated as approved, I would like to use Ms. Tang's analogy of preparing a battle plan. Okay. And that's fine. On October 27th, Corando submitted a battle plan. The problem is they forgot to list where the cavalry was, and they didn't list where the cannons were, and they didn't show how the supplies were going to be delivered. So you have a battle plan, and it's a decent concept, but that's all it is a concept. If you go out, the not only will the government's testimony, but Carando's also agreed that the plans were not complete. Mr. Marlowe of Stanley will testify, and this goes to the alleged four-month delay, because it wasn't. There were expectations that the battle plan would be updated, that more information would be given. Okay? You need to know where the cavalry is. You need to know where the cannons are. So he met with Carando's, construction manager at that time, in, I think it was February 17th, but it was mid-February, and they walked through the project, and they said, what about this? Where is this going to be? You know, the bridge, where is this going to be? And Mr. Marlowe can be expected to testify that Carando's representative agreed that a lot of the items just weren't there. And so following that is when Mr. Marlowe prepared his or updated the records. Again, Carando's claiming they're deleted. They're not deleted. Their records are there. The submittal log, noting what needs to be done, what the status of the project is the item that's updated. So Mr. Marlowe will testify, or can be expected to testify, that based on that mid-February meeting, he updated the log and included in that was an explanation of exactly what happened at their meeting. So Carando, it wasn't a surprise to them. Carando went out to the job site, and Carando agreed that the October 27th submittal wasn't complete, that you couldn't build the project based on what they had submitted. Another fundamental problem with Carando's performance on the project was what they identify as some of their key submittals. They're later in the project. They're fundamental to the project. They're only raised for the first time later in the project. For example, the issue of constructability. There will be testimony showing that in mid-April, Carando submitted documents that indicated that they can go forward with the project. Okay. A month later, they're raising issues as to the constructability of the project. That wasn't until May. That's substantially into the project. The other thing I'd like to address is, or which the evidence will show, number one, Mr. Lanning will testify, and this goes back to preliminary discussions. Mr. Lanning will testify that the three-month delay from the notice of award to mid-2014 when the contract was signed, that was strictly due to no issue related to a right-of-way, none, as I responded to Ms. Tang. It was simply that's the time it takes the government to process the documents. And we're trying to work to improve that, but at that time, this particular contract took 3 months to process. It shouldn't, but it did. With respect to the claim that the notice to proceed was delayed, well, the evidence, the testimony will show that was done to assist, to facilitate Carando. Carando was responsible for processing its building permit and trying to get approvals, such as the archaeological one. Carando claims that that was the government's responsibility. We dispute that. We think the testimony will show that the contract documents clearly recite that that's the sole responsibility for the contractor. So what Carando is characterizing as a delay, the government says, we did to assist you, because they got terminated for not prosecuting the work for default. Imagine what it would have been if the government issued the notice to proceed 2 months earlier. It was done to facilitate them, to allow them time to process their permits. The notice to proceed is the testimony will show, the notice to proceed is the triggering event for the contractor to start construction. It is also the first time that the contractor can invoice the project. But fundamental is, and standard practice is, that the contractor starts processing items earlier. And even though they can't invoice those items, if they've been awarded a contract and there are certain conditions, maybe it's possibly the pre-construction meeting, etc., but at that point forward, they're allowed to file a claim for their charges and their services. And the testimony will show, so to Carando's point, if the notice to proceed is never awarded or issued, well, Carando can still file, contractor can still file a claim for its charges in reliance upon the contract. The government continues to struggle with the idea that one claim is that Stanley was trying to undermine the project by creating delays, when a simple review of the documents shows that Stanley's Marlowe was Carando's major supporter. You know, as late as April 28, 2015, he is writing the director saying, I think they can still do the project. He was their major supporter. The testimony and evidence will show that he wrote Parsons Brinkerhoff when, in response to what Mr. Marlowe characterized as Carando's failure to do anything with the relocation of the overhead lines, GPA overhead lines, advocating and requesting that they organize a meeting with GPA so that it could be addressed, so that he could, quote-unquote, expedite the project. The idea that that same individual is trying to undermine and not be a, quote-unquote, loyal member of the project, they're just simply inconsistent, and they make no sense, no sense at all. In closing, the testimony and evidence will show that concerns were raised early on because Carando wasn't doing anything, wasn't being active, and that the Guam Transportation Group, at the direction of the director, spent a number of months trying to facilitate, trying to prod Carando into being active and starting construction on the project. Only after 3.5 to 4 months or so of virtually no activity and no responsiveness to request to submit documents, to respond to questions. Only after that time did the director and the Guam Transportation Group endorse terminating Carando. And it was termination for in good faith, as the evidence will show.
Is that all, Mr. Cooper?
Yes.
Thank you. All right.
Let me find out from the next. them so that they can be coming up while we're adjourned.
It's Mr. Ho.
Okay, we call Mr. Ho, and while Mr. Ho is coming up, let's take a 10-minute recess. We'll go off the record and then start with Mr. Ho.
Thank you, Mr. Ho.
Mr. Ho.
Off the record, it's the first one.
It is 10:27 a.m. On December 9, 2015, we are continuing the formal hearing of OPA PA 15009.
Okay, so let's go down to case in chief, and Ms. Kang, you are the first to present your evidence. You're going to call your first witness.
Thank you. So, my first witness should be Jim Yun Ho, and he is the principal of Cortec.
You just have a swear?
Yes, sir.
Right? Yeah. For the record, Mr. Ho has previously been brought to the witness stand.
Could you state your name for the record?
Okay.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Please have a seat, Mr. Hall. Your witness, Ms. Pan.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Hall.
Good morning.
You are the Cortec is the takeover contractor for the Billy Tigua Bridge replacement project, correct?
Yes.
And the contract is between Cortec and Westchester Water.
Yes.
Who was that again? Westchester? I think it's Westchester Fire and Insurance. I will get the full name.
No, that's correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I forgot. Who is their local representative?
Mr. Sterling.
Tom Sterling
is their counselor, and their engineering consultant is Sam Reed of Vertex, V-E-R-T-E-X.
Is that correct, Mr. Reed?
That's correct. Mr. Reed is out of Hawaii, though.
He's getting the Cassie
Territory.
Yes. Okay, so Mr. Ho, do you know how many people bid, or how many companies bid on the, I'll call it the takeover project for the bridge?
Only one company submitted.
And who is that?
Cortec.
Do you know why there was only one company? If you do.
I object. I was the usual to testify as to what others did or didn't do.
I asked Mr. Ho if he knew. I'm not asking him to testify at what somebody else did.
Can I overrule the objection? Please proceed. You may answer the question, Mr. Ho.
Could you repeat your question?
Do you know, if you know the answer, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine. Do you know why there was only one bid for the takeover contract?
As a contractor, it's not easy to submit a bid when there's a bond call.
Okay.
Mr. Hill, I'm going to have to ask you to face this way. I know it's kind of hard to talk to this thing, but I also have to, the public honor, and I also have to see your face as you testify. So
yes.
Ascertain your credibility as you answer these questions. Please proceed.
Okay, and Cortec submitted a bid, and it was accepted, correct?
Yes.
How much was the offer?
$5 million.
All right. And the bid documents that were provided to Cortec, do you know if there was the original phasing plan construction documents in this project? And just to be clear, when I say original phasing plan, it's the original plan that Carranza bid on when it was awarded this project.
Yes.
Say that again.
Do you know if the plans that you bid on were the same plans that Carondo bid on initially?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you to open that white binder in front of you and go to an exhibit marked 32.
For the record, Ms. Tang, what is the binder?
Oh, that is Carondo's exhibit.
Okay. Did Mr. Peeler have the opportunity to look at the binder?
Actually, they, no.
Okay, Mr. Peeler, would you like to look at the binder? I believe
no,
it's the same
fine.
Binder of exhibits that you have filed.
That's perfectly fine.
Oh, do you have the opportunity?
That's fine.
Okay, so it's up.
I see.
For the record, the witness is looking at Carondo's exhibits that were filed in this matter. Please proceed.
Okay, this is Exhibit 32. Mr. Hart, would you mind just taking a moment to just review this?
Just for the record, we want to know, this is an email dated...
I beg your pardon? I'm sorry. This is an email that actually it was a communication... And if you start at the, I'm sorry, there's a last page on this. It's inadvertently stuck in the communication from Mr. Keeler. That's not supposed to be it. But it is a email between Jack Marlowe and various individuals in Parsons between June 8th and June 9th. And then it was forwarded to me by Mr. Keeler, as you can see on the third page, on November 9, 2015. I believe this was also the Exhibit J that was referenced in Mr. Keeler's or DPW's, I believe it was the reply to our summary judgment.
For Mr. Coe, this is his first time, and that's the reason, because it is several pages long. Where should he start? Should he start from the back? How should he begin?
Let me, Mr. Hope, have you seen this email before?
No.
Okay. And take a moment to review. I'm going to start with the back. The last email. And the email is, there's a page on the bottom. Start with page 7 here. There's an email between Jack Marlowe, dated June 8, 2015, to Lyndon Kobayashi, Joseph Peck, and several other people on the CC line. Do you see that?
Yes.
And it relates to submittal 562.006, existing bridge assessment. Right?
Yes.
Now take a moment to review the issues. Mm-hmm. I direct you to please take your time to review it. I will say that this is an email from Mr. Marlowe to Joe and Lyndon asking them for their opinions or their comments on the various questions, technical questions. There are 7 questions. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay.
Excuse me for a second. Could we please have an explanation as to what his review is? Is it in a special capacity as an engineer or anything of that nature?
What's your offer of proof for the testimony, Ms. Jane?
Okay, well, this goes to one of the issues that's raised in Mr. DPW, Mr. Taylor's brief, was that there was an argument that the takeover contract is evidence, basically, that the alternate phasing plan doesn't work, the original phasing plan is constructible. And this is in response to that issue.
Mr. Keeler, I'm going to allow the questioning to proceed.
Thank you.
Proceed this time. Okay, Mr. Ho, you're Mr. Ho?
Yes.
Please put your electronic device away.
Oh, I'm trying to understand.
Oh,
Are you calculating?
Yes. Because they says that the 100-ton coal crane weighs about 32,000 pounds. This is about the same as 8 cubic yards of concrete.
Okay.
Well, I want to validate it.
Is he just reviewing the document, or are you actually requesting that he make these
mathematical
calculations? Because otherwise...
No. Mr. Just briefly review it.
Okay.
You don't have to do a calculation at this time. If you do need to, then let us know.
Okay.
Okay. Do you recall receiving any information contained in this email in your bid package?
No, I didn't.
And you didn't receive this email or this information in any form?
No, I didn't.
Okay. And before I get into the details, the information contained in this email, is it important to a contractor like yourself bidding on this takeover project?
It is important because there is some issue with limitation of having the weight over the bridge.
Okay, so are you referring to on page 7 the email between Lyndon from Lyndon Joe to Jack Marlowe?
No, I'm talking about page 2.
Page 2. And you're specifically referring to
the 10,000 pound axle.
I'm sorry, I think you're looking at
line 1, 2, 3, 3 line, the third line from the bottom.
Oh. Page 2. Okay. Please explain.
It says based upon this alone, an axle weight in excess of 10,000 pounds should be restricted. That's usually half. Usually axle we can carry 20,000 pounds. That's a standard. That basically will reduce down to half. But the true impact will be more than half because the 10,000 capacity inclusive of the truck weight. So if you take out the truck weight, it will seriously reduce the carrying, whether this could be concrete precast panel or mixer truck or aggregate. This is a serious issue.
Okay, so you're referring to page 2 at the bottom where it starts with 2004.
Right.
There were EFL, EHD, bridge inspectors inspected the 2 bridges and recommended a 5-ton limit, correct?
Right.
A 5-ton limit means, what is your understanding of a 5-ton limit on a bridge?
Usually, the way I understand it, basically limits the total gross vehicle weight. That means the self weight plus the load weight. That's how I understand.
How heavy is a crane?
Depends.
For this project? How heavy would be a crane that you would use for this project? Would it be over 20 tons?
I believe so. It depends on how we dismantle the counterweight and then it really depends.
Okay, but the crane as a whole, how heavy is it? If you know, over 20 tons?
I think minimum 20 tons.
Minimum 20 tons. Okay. And what this email is saying is that there's a problem with the two bridges because there's a 5-ton weight limit, correct?
Yes.
So a crane can't travel over the... What it's saying also is that a crane can't travel over it because
right.
of the weight limit.
Right.
Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Would this information have been important to you as a bidder on a project?
It is important.
How
critical.
Why?
because if you build the bridge, this kind of bridge, the first thing that you need to have, you need to drive the pile because the soil condition is so weak. So we have to drive the pile, and for us to drive the pile, we need to have a crane set up, and also we have to carry the pile. And then we need to have a superstructure, the plank, and then we have to pour the concrete to reinforce that. So all those things, the weight is the most critical consideration for the transportation.
How would this affect your prosecution or the phasing of the work? Would it affect the phasing of your work?
You will definitely affect.
Okay.
If they're going to limit by 10,000 pounds, this is something totally different.
This was not disclosed to you?
No.
Can you go to page 6, please? The numbers on the bottom page. This is an email between Linda Kobayashi and Mark.
I'm sorry,
please,
page?
6. Please review that.
And just for clarity, Ms. Tang, who is Mark Hirota?
I believe he is an employee of Parsons Brinkerhoff PB. That's my belief.
That's correct.
Parsons
Brinkerhoff.
Brinkerhoff.
PB. So this email was, as you can see, sent on June 8, 2015, while Carando was still contractor on the project. In paragraph 2, Mr. Kobayashi tells Mark Hirota, I can't find any evidence to inform the contractor of the fact that the bridge cannot carry Guam legal loads during the bidding process and the bridge was never load posted. We feel that this could open us up to a claim as in the fact that this affected his means and method of constructing the bridge and moving material and equipment. And then he goes on to discuss the options where you can go around the island one way or the other way. So, Mr. Ho, focusing on that, had you been presented with this information, would you have bid differently?
We have to think differently.
How would it change your bid? Let me re-ask this question. You're familiar with the, I'll call it the original phasing plan.
Yes.
All right. And that's what you bid on, correct? Corte did.
Yes, and there are some special consideration was given by funding company.
Okay, for?
I think one of the most critical issue was the power line issue.
Okay.
So we discussed.
Let me focus on this issue right now. So when you bid on the takeover contract, you based it on the original phasing plan, correct?
Yes.
Now, having reviewed this, how does this Exhibit 32 and the information contained, will this change how CoreTech will do the phasing in its prosecution of the work on this project?
It will change.
And how would it change?
If we cannot carry a certain weight or material above the bridge or over the bridge, then we really have to think differently, whether we have to build a temporary bridge first or we have to go around the island. But I don't think it's as feasible. It says that you can go around it, but you cannot go around it because we're not building one bridge, we're building two bridges. So I can access this way, I can access this way, but in between, impossible. So detour will not solve the problem. So I think we need to build a temporary bridge to pass the material inside the bridge.
To drive the power and do the power
within the
span located inside.
Yes, because for you to drive the pipe, you need to have a crate, and you need to deliver the pipe itself. And then you need to have a concrete. So it's not just a pile. You've got to have equipment to set that up.
Okay, so a pile, just for so everyone understands, and this is my description, it's like a big, fat telephone pole. But it's much bigger and fatter and longer.
Yes.
So you got to pick it up and basically drive it into the ground.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So based on the information presented in Exhibit 32, would it make the original phasing plan unworkable?
It won't work. If the page tool is 10,000, if that is the limitation, it will not work.
This type of information, if it was available at the time of bidding, would you have expected it as a bidder to be provided this information?
It's a differing site condition. It is.
I beg your pardon?
We call it differing site condition.
So it would have had to be provided to you if it was available?
Yes, it should.
Okay. And because it wasn't available to you and wasn't provided to you at the time of your bid, how would a contractor like CoreTech address this issue?
Contractor, we take a reasonable risk, but we don't scientifically do the structural calculation of each structure or soil condition. We don't do that. I mean, not only the bridge, but also even soil condition. Government release, whether it's the federal government or private sector, they give us a boring test, and then we calculate based upon those information. And then if it's different from actual, then we call REA, Request for Equitable Adjustment, or Change Order. That's the standard process.
So based on this information that was provided, that you see, it will result in a change order. If Coronda were to go forward, I'm sorry, if CoreTech were to go forward with the takeover agreement, it would necessitate a change order.
I certainly believe so. Because there is a standard, I mean, manufacturer standard and federal highway standard, and also bridge formula. Bridge formula usually allows 15,000 pounds. The manufacturer allows usually 20,000 pounds. 10,000 pounds is too little. You would tremendously reduce the capacity of the boat.
Now, one of the suggestions was to disassemble the crane, break it into, there's the counterweight, which kind of holds the crane down so it doesn't tip over, and then put it on a low buoy trailer and then bring it across. Does that work? Is that an acceptable phasing or acceptable method?
You could try.
If you don't know, you don't know. It's okay.
I don't think I'm going to do that. I mean, I would dismantle it as much as possible, and then I'm going to reduce the counterweight. That is separable easily, so that's possible.
But let me direct you to page 2, top of page 2. And it says, this is an email, a response from Mr. Kobayashi to Mr. Marlowe and others regarding the crane. He says, after reviewing the crane specifications, it appears that the crane and case 2 loading configuration proposed.
Where is it?
I'm sorry, page 2 on the top of page 2. There.
Yeah, okay.
After reviewing the crane specifications, it appears that the crane and case 2 loading configurations proposed would be classified as a permit load. Please request the contractor the permit for allowance of an overloaded vehicle crane. If the contractor is planning on running his low buoy over the existing bridges carrying the counterweight, he needs to get a permit from DPW. DPW does have the right to reject it if it's unsafe for passage. Okay, so this is addressing the issue of dismantling. First of all, is Mr. Kobayashi here saying that basically it will be a permit load, meaning that they would the low buoy carrying any dismantled crane would have to get a permit? Is that what your understanding is?
Yes.
Permit from DPW?
Yes.
Because it's exceeding the 5-ton load?
Yes.
And DPW may reject it if it's unsafe for passage?
Right.
And
yes.
because who knows what, because it's over the 5-ton load, there's safety issues.
Right.
Okay, as a contractor, is that a reasonable risk for you to take?
No. We're not gambling.
To take your truck, if someone says dismantle it, and you know what, go get a permit, and it will be over 5-ton, but just do it. Is that a reasonable request?
No.
So, you're familiar with Carondo's alternate phasing plan, correct? With respect to the steel bridge, construction of the steel bridge.
No, really.
Oh, well, okay. Carondo has a phasing plan which involves building a temporary steel bridge over the 2 existing steel bridges.
No, I'm not familiar.
Okay. Is that something you might consider doing as an alternative?
We have to.
Why is that?
You cannot carry the material there.
Otherwise?
Yes.
In between the bridges?
Correct.
And that's assuming if you had to go around the island, you might run into
it. It doesn't matter, because you still have to get inside between 2 bridges.
You have to get inside the middle, yeah. I'm familiar with the project.
Yes. If this one bridge, maybe it's okay.
Yeah.
Because
you can go around the island the other
right.
way. But not this one.
Not this one.
Yeah. Okay. So I have no further questions at this time for Mr. Ho.
Mr. Keeler, your witness.
Mr. Ho, good morning. Are you an engineer?
No.
Okay. Your company, prior to submitting its bid, did you go out on the site, on the job site, and do a visual inspection of the project?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And as part of preparing your proposal and getting your package together, did you consider, to the extent that you would be needing subcontractors and what type of work, specialty work, you would be having other companies do?
Yes, we do.
Okay, and you gave consideration to the work on the bridge and what that specific cost would be, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and that was all contained in your proposal?
Yes.
Okay. There's been discussion regarding the 2004 bridge inspection report, okay, and the fact that that wasn't provided to you.
Objection to state's testimony.
I just feel in response to the objection.
I believe that's what he testified to.
Okay.
What
2004?
I believe the question to Mr. Hove was, did you receive the information contained in this Exhibit 32 after reviewing it?
And the Exhibit 32...
is it course...
Okay, I'm just feeling, does Exhibit 32 contain this report that you're citing?
It was specifically referenced. I'll rephrase the question.
Okay,
I don't...
Please rephrase the question.
Yeah.
I'm going to sustain the objection.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Mr. Ho, did you ever receive a 2004 inspection report?
Not that I...
Okay. If, and that report's 11 years old, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so if there was remedial or reinforcement work on the bridge subsequent to 2004, is it fair to say that that report would be considered outdated?
Yes, you can say it.
Objection. First of all, if he has a report you would like Mr. Ho to review, he should present it. Otherwise, it's calling for speculation.
Mr. Keeler?
Doesn't call for speculation.
I think he was just getting Mr. Ho's understanding of the report. I'm going to overrule your objection. Please proceed.
Okay.
Mr. Ho, if CoreTech decides that the plans and specifications are not sufficient, okay, what is the proper procedure for addressing that concern?
I had a meeting with DPW, PTG, the program manager, PV, design manager, and also Stanley, the construction manager at the PTG's office. We talk about this load issue, and I didn't get any indication that there is a limitation.
Okay. But for argument purposes, let's say there is a limitation. You don't get to walk away from the project, do you? You get to submit a request for information or a proposed change order, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that's the proper way of proceeding with it.
Well, first of all, we need to get the facts. Because now we understand that there's a 10,000-pound limitation way below the most stringent requirement that is a bridge formula.
And if you submit a proposed change order for a revised plans and specifications, that would include typically a time extension as well as an adjustment for price?
Yes, sir.
You had discussed that, again, with the revised, if you had to do a revised plan, that you would view it as a differing site condition.
Yes, sir.
Correct? Could you tell us why that would be a differing site condition?
The way we understand, the Federal Highway Standard is basically allowing 80,000 pounds that will be prevailed. That's a standard. Some states, they don't accept that, but I think Guam is now accepting the federal standard. California accepts. I don't think Hawaii accepts.
Mr. Ho, you said 80,000?
80,000 pounds.
Okay.
That's a total gross weight.
Or 8 tons. No, 4 tons.
40 tons.
40 tons,
yes.
As opposed to... the 5 tons.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure I
right.
heard you right.
Right.
So 40 tons.
So that's a short time. We call short time.
That's the highway standard now?
Yes. But Washington states, they don't accept that.
Okay.
I mean, many states, even Hawaii, I don't think they accept 80,000 limitation.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is a huge difference. I mean, too big of a difference. 10,000 is way too small.
Mr. Ho, you also stated that part of the project, your company would be responsible for the means and methods of completing the project, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so that it's possible that that may require the disassembly and putting back together of a crane, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Ms. Tang, any recross or redirect?
Yes. Thank you. I know Mr. Keeler just asked you one of the options is to disassemble the crane, but I think that having read page 2 of Exhibit 32, is that still a viable option?
We don't know how low we can go down.
How low?
How low of the pounds we can dismantle. That I don't know. That 10,000 is really, really low.
Can you give me an example what 10,000, what's a something that, how many pickup truck full of dirt would that be? Like a regular pickup truck. If you know.
I mean, let's say Mercedes-Benz is
he hasn't been qualified as an expert at all. I know that I'd avoid mathematical calculations.
Okay, no problem. So the crane is 25 tons. Do you know how much a counterweight weighs?
Even if we dismantle and then remove the counterweight, the self-weight without counterweight, is by far heavier than 10,000. That's a given.
That's a given.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then, and just one other question: when you go to a project site, mm-hmm. and if in this case it's a bridge, and it's not load posted, mm-hmm. is it fair to assume that it meets highway standards, unless they specifically indicate otherwise, or that you could, you know, it meets let me rephrase that. Is it fair to assume that the load is probably not limited because there's no load posting?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question. Can you repeat?
If you go to a project site
mm-hmm.
and there's no sign that says 5 tons,
mm-hmm.
then you wouldn't know. You can't. That information would not be available to you.
Right.
Correct?
Correct.
And so as a contractor, you would assume that it's safe to run your trucks or your crane, whatever, over that bridge, because that's what the load posting is supposed to do, tell you that there's a limit.
Not 100%, because we would probably have no problem carrying the dump trucks and mixer truck, but when it comes to a crane, we would have to have a second thought on that.
Okay, so you have to, but otherwise, you would not know that it's 5-ton load.
No.
Limit.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Any recross, Mr.
No.
I have several questions, Mr. Ho. It was stated at the beginning you are the contractor that bidded on the takeover project. When did you become aware of this? Approximately?
2 to 3 months. 2 to 3 months.
2 to 3 months.
Yes.
So how much time approximately did the bonding company give companies to bid on the
very team? Short.
Very short.
Very short.
1 month?
No. Probably about one week.
1 week.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Very short period.
Very short. So the bond... Westchester, did they announce it by an ad in the paper?
They came into our office and asked for us to participate in the bid.
I see. Were you aware of anybody else?
I do know that they had a meeting with many contractors.
Okay. Were you surprised that you were asked?
No, I was not surprised.
Okay. May I add, what was the nature of the conversation?
They said that they basically are the bonding company, surety, or a contractor, Corando, They're looking for a contractor to take over the project and complete it. And they're asking if you're interested in this project, are you willing to do a takeover or you're going to be a contractor to DPW directly? That was the main conversation.
So just for clarity, because this is the government, who do you report to in the progress of this? Who would you be?
Bonding company.
The bonding company.
We don't work for DPW.
You do not work. Okay, that's that will. Okay, so the progress and progress payments that you would be submitting would go directly to Westchester.
Yes, ma'am.
DPW is completely out of this picture.
Not completely. Because the surety asked us to follow DPW standard. So that we have to abide by.
DPW's
standard, the specs,
oh,
the, and then their inspections. That we have to go by their book, but our client is a surety.
And so payment will be coming from
surety.
From the surety. So when were you selected?
About 1 day after it was submitted?
Approximately what month, may I ask? July, August? September?
October?
I won't hold you to it, but around October.
Sorry. So,
so you said within submission, the
right
next...
Away.
Right away.
Right away.
You were given the...
The intent to award.
Intent to award, okay. And that was around October 2015, last year. I mean,
this
a few months ago,
yes.
Just less than a few months
right
ago.
Right after we submitted, we basically received this indication.
And have you started yet?
We did prepare a lot of the we call submittals.
Mm-hmm.
The contractor has to prepare a lot of submittal logs and submittals. We're working on the paperwork right now.
Okay.
And we have not received the building permit yet.
You have not yet.
Gotcha.
So just to recap, so sometime in October, we'll just say for the end, and toward the end of October, you were given this, and you're now working on the project, but you have not gotten the building, but not yet given the, I don't know if I'm using this, but have you been given the notice to proceed?
Yes, we received notice to proceed.
Okay. But you have not yet gotten the...
Building permit.
Okay. And have you checked when on issues like that? Do you go to Westchester?
Westchester.
You don't go to Edgewood at all to DPW.
Right now, we're working with Tom Sterling.
Okay, so all your communication is with
Tom Sterling.
Okay. Going back, approximately in your bid, how many days or approximately how long did you estimate the bridge would take? The two bridges, how long do you recall?
I think we asked for a year and a half, if I'm not mistaken.
A year and a half.
Year and a half.
Okay. And would that be from the notice to proceed?
Yes.
Or would that
notice
from, not from the building permit?
If there is a unreasonable delay from NTP to building permit,
mm-hmm.
we can go back to the clients. If there is a delay, and it's caused by design issue, drawing issue, then it will extend the construction period.
So the notice to proceed came around October also when you got it.
Notice to proceed didn't come right away.
Oh, okay.
The award was done, I think, October, but I think there is some delay because I think the governor has to sign the contract with bonding company.
I see.
So I think there was some delay in between.
Okay. And you mentioned you still have not gotten the building permit.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So are you working on staging right now? Or how does that work? When do you... The issue about getting your materials, your crane down there...
Construction always from 0 to, let's say, 100, mm-hmm. the, if I'm going to convert it as a dollar figure, mm-hmm. the, we call S curve.
Yes.
So from initial and then close out, very small amount of increment, and very small amount of increment. In between,
right.
it basically goes up so high. Because construction, especially Guam, you need to bring a lot of stuff out of the island.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of preparation time. And then and this kind of government project, especially government project, federal government projects, we need to spend a lot of time to prepare the submittals.
Mm-hmm.
It's paperwork.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are you still in the process of submitting those submittals?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. When do you think you might finish?
Submittal is basically continuation. But
yes,
the initial,
but for the initial.
I think we'll be
for
done.
The phasing.
We're basically almost ready.
You're almost ready.
Yes.
Uh-huh. All right. And so the clock, though, has started for you.
Yes.
Okay.
But that's a standard.
That's the standard.
That's
okay.
A standard.
So let me rephrase my question. Once you've gotten all your permits and getting your equipment down there, how long do you would you estimate the construction? It would take you 6 months to do all of that, approximately, or you know, how long would the construction?
I was not able to talk to Attorney Tang. We had a very important meeting with the DPW. There is a power line.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So there's a power line. Let's say this is the bridge. There's a power line.
Right.
Overhead line.
Yes.
So we need to drive
for the
pipe.
Record, Mr. Ho, for the record, the witness is using his cell phone.
I'm sorry.
As an example.
No, it's okay.
He's using his cell phone.
It's for
as a model for the bridge or something. The length of the cell phone to illustrate how the power line runs the length of his cell phone and how the power line, or excuse me, how his hand runs the length of the cell phone is analogizing how the power line runs the length of the bridge. Please proceed.
May I give him a pen and a paper to sketch so it could be part of the record? I
mean,
if I don't think it's necessary.
I think
it's necessary.
That's fine. Please proceed.
Our first question to DPW, PTG, and Dennis Camacho, all this, the group, there is an existing power line. We need to drive the pile. The OSHA allows the distance, I think, minimum the clearance was about 25 feet. That was a major, major problem. I didn't really pay attention to the load issue. So the original sequence was we drive the pile and then we relocate the power line to the other side so we can drive the pile the other half and then we do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll put the plank on top of the pile and job is done. This is a very simple job. Extremely simple. I mean, it's not complicated. Driving pile, putting the plank, not hard. The problem, 25 feet distance, several years ago, OSHA changed the rules. So it was about 10 to 15 feet clearance. So everybody understood, no problem to drive the pile half of the other bridge. We understand from Swiss Bridge, the subcontractor, no, they changed the rules. So we cannot drive the pile on this side either. So we cannot start a project.
So how are we going to start the project?
Impossible. That's why there was a major issue. So we talk about these things. I mean, it's an error. It's a mistake. Because at the time, they kind of calculate based upon 10 to 15 feet old rule, but now safety is, you know, major issue. So they maintain a much longer clearance. So we talk about it, and then can we turn off the power? Then the DPW, it's not up to us. We can work with the GPA and mayors. And I do believe that they had a follow-up meeting, and they are okay to turn off the power because I think there is another feeding from the other route, so this village will still maintain the power. If not, then it has to be scheduled properly, you know, a few hours a day. So that was a major, major issue.
And have they come back to you yet as to what would be the appropriate plan? Is still in discussion?
Not in written document, but I think mayor's standpoint, please get the job done. We will cooperate. That was the feedback that I received. So we were paying attention to the power issue.
More so than the weight issue.
Well, the weight wasn't really an issue.
Is weight now an issue for you?
It is an issue. 10,000 pounds per axle it's not half. If you deduct the self-weight, the impact will be 70% impact, minimum, in my opinion.
What do you mean by, what does that 70% do?
I'll give you one example. We have dump trucks. Based upon manufacturer's capacity, we can carry almost 29 to 30 cubic yard. But highway, 80,000 pounds, will reduce down to 23.5 cubic yard. But the bridge formula that we are currently using on island will reduce down to 13.5 cubic yards. That's based upon 14 to 15,000 pounds per axle. So if we're going to use 10,000 pounds per axle, you will probably reduce to 6 cubic yards. So if I'm going to use a concrete mixer truck, we can carry 10.5 cubic yards. But if we use the bridge formula, we can carry only 6 cubic yards. If I'm going to use 10,000 pounds, it's going to be 3 cubic yards.
Mm-hmm. Cuts everything in half further.
Chop.
Yeah.
But that's not an issue. Yes, okay. You can order 3 cubic yards. It costs more,
with
more traffic,
yes.
But I don't know how I can handle this. Because of the self, the crane weight.
Yes, itself.
You cannot dismantle everything.
Yeah.
So if that is the case, then you probably need to build bridge, a construction bridge, or contemporary bridge.
To carry the weight of the crane.
Yes. It's not going to be a concrete bridge, but temporary bridge. It will impact the schedule and cost.
Longer schedule, longer, more cost?
Yes, ma'am.
In fact, I don't want to ask you further questions on that because that's you're now the contractor. But let me rephrase. Had you known about the weight issue, would you have bid on the contract?
I would have to really think twice.
Think twice about bidding?
Yes, ma'am.
Why?
Too complicated.
Too complicated.
Too complicated. I mean, it's a simple job, but too many restrictions that we don't want to be here.
Okay. But you're now the contractor, so what are you going to do?
I think we need to validate if 10,000 pounds is really a limitation. And if it's really a 10,000 pounds, then I have to really figure out the crane weight, how far we can dismantle. If we cannot go down to 10,000 pounds per axle, then we have only two choices. We will use a different technique of the crane. If not, we have no choice but to build a temporary bridge.
Is the temporary bridge your last option?
That will be the last option because it will delay holding.
Uh-huh.
The contractor is really sensitive to timing. Mm-hmm. We want to make it easier and faster.
Mm-hmm. So disassembling the crane is the...
Disassembling the crane, something we can handle. So we can do it. But temporary bridge, you have to have a spec out, you have to order, and then go through the full process from DPW. It takes time. So if we can handle by ourselves, that's our number one priority.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification,
Mr. Howard. That was very enlightening.
I just had one question, Mr. Howard, brought about by your discussion with the public auditor. It's just for clarity. You may have answered it before in your prior testimony with Mr. Keeler or Mr. Tang. But in the bid documents that you reviewed for the project, did they describe in any way these weight restrictions on the bridge? No?
Not that I know.
So thank you very much.
As a counter, does this come as a surprise to you?
Big surprise. 10,000 is it's too little. Too little. Too small.
Does either party have any redirect or recross based on those questions?
No, thank you.
All right. Mr. Ho, you are excused as a witness. Of course, you're subject to recall by either the party at any time during the course of these proceedings. And I have to instruct you not to discuss your testimony with either party or with any third parties until these proceedings have concluded, which we hope will be by tomorrow, but we're not sure. Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your glasses,
Mr.
Thank you. Your next
witness, Mr. Your next witness, Mr. Okay,
we
did you want to take a break for this? I'm happy to go forward. I think someone had asked. I'm going to call Mr. Yangro, who's here.
Why don't we, it's somebody, why don't we at least go to 12?
Yeah,
for 12.
That's
all right.
Good.
Okay.
All right, so you can proceed,
Ms. Payne.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we start, how many other witnesses, Ms. Tang, do you have downstairs? I saw Mr. Marlowe. I didn't.
He's not my, he is. I'm sorry.
I forgot Mr. Marlowe and Mr. Dominguez.
Can I suggest that, can they be on call available within, say, 30 minutes? So I don't have to, or even 1 hour, so that we don't have to keep them waiting.
That's too long.
No, let's just proceed. We'll call them back.
No. All I'm saying is they can leave now, but if we give them 1 hour notice, can they come back?
That's too long for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
We really?
We
need to finish.
Yeah, we need to finish today as quickly as possible. Mr.
Okay,
Mr.
May I suggest that maybe ask them to come back after lunch? So I don't...
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Is that
we
reasonable?
Don't know yet what time lunch
Yeah,
is
I don't want to keep them. I will try to expedite.
Okay, so what time are we going to start? You want to start at 2?
How long do you think Mr. Myongrao's testimony will take?
Well, I never examined him, so... Well, I have.
So we're trying to figure out what time is lunch.
I'm thinking, okay, so you're planning to go to 12:30?
We would like to.
Okay, so that gives me 1 hour. And then what time will we be back for lunch?
We'll give an hour.
Okay,
yeah,
so that's 1:30. So would to be...
Who is your next witness?
I would like to call Mr. Marlowe.
Then he needs to be back here, let's say, before 1:30.
That's fine.
Yeah. And then who will be the next witness after that?
Mr. Dominguez.
Then he should be within half an hour after that.
Sure.
So can someone, as soon as we do this, we'll let them know. Okay.
Can you please swear in with us?
Please state your name for the record.
Glenn Leonberg.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes. Mr. Leonard, I'll keep having a seat. Now, Ms. Kane, we got the second binder, which is composed of the exhibits that were filed by DPW. Would you like to examine that file?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so Ms. Tang, your witness.
All right, thank you.
No, I can't do that.
Right. Mr. Leonboro, when did you become the director of DPW?
January 2015.
January 1st?
January 1st, Monday, I think it's the 5th.
Okay.
I look at my calendar.
Just to give you an idea. Okay. And prior to being the director, do you have any other construction experience?
I've had numerous construction experiences, not in, I worked for oil companies who built oil tanks. We built terminals. I was involved in building gas stations.
Okay.
Basically, construction within the oil industry.
Right. So buildings and tanks. Oil tanks. Okay. Yep. And these were, for the most part, I call them vertical projects.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Do you have any experience in road or other than your new job as the director? Do you have any road or specific?
As a participant, we at Shell worked with the Federal Highway to build, I don't remember the bridge anymore, but the one down in Hagen.
But when you say participant, you weren't.
We're customers.
You're a customer, so you weren't really managing the project and involved in all the.
No.
Reviews and submittals and planning.
We were part of the planning because it affected us, yes.
So they talked to you about it.
Yes.
We're included in discussions.
That's right.
Okay. And can you give just us a brief background, a brief educational background, please?
How far back do you want to go?
Not too far back. But do you have a college degree?
I do.
And what is that?
I've got a Bachelor's of Social Work. That's in 1978. I got a Master's of Business Administration, an MBA. Yeah.
Any area specializing in your master's degree? Any special?
Basically management and finance.
Okay. All right. So, we talked about the takeover contract, and that's with Cortec, right?
Yes.
And were you involved in the in that at all?
No.
And who in DPW is making decisions regarding the takeover contract?
I was conflicted out because my son-in-law works for Cortec, so whenever Cortec is engaged, I pass the baton, if you will, to Peter Spinovich, as the deputy director for the Department of Public Works.
Okay, and. So I'm not going to specifically talk about the takeover room, but I want to talk about determination and calling the bond company. So you're involved in that, right?
I was.
All right. And you were here in this room, and you heard Mr. Hurst's testimony?
I was.
All right. You had a chance to follow and review Exhibit 32 that he reviewed?
Just your discussions. Yes, I was.
Okay. And it's in front of you, and please I direct your attention to that, please. Exhibit 32.
Okay.
All right. Have you seen? I'm sorry, is it on 32? Yeah, it looks like it.
For the record, the witness is looking at portions of Exhibit 32 of Corrado's exhibits. Please proceed.
So if your question is, have I seen these emails? The answer is no.
Exhibit 32, the emails in Exhibit 32.
That's right.
So today is the first time you've seen this chain of emails.
That's correct.
Has any of the information contained in these emails been discussed with you at any meeting prior to today?
No, not with me.
Not with you?
That's correct.
Do you know if it was discussed with anyone else?
I don't know.
Oh, okay, so when you say not with me, you're just saying you've never seen it. And
that's
you
right.
Don't know about it being discussed.
That's right.
And you heard Mr. Ho's testimony about the Lode and Crane issues with respect to the discussion in Exhibit 32.
Yes.
Okay. And did you understand them, the issues?
I understand his issues, yes.
Yes, as he presented them, as Carter presented them. Do you have, as the, sitting there as a director, do you think that the information contained in Exhibit 32 should have been provided to Cortec at the time of the takeover bid?
Yeah, I don't think the GPW or any part of our organization will knowingly not disclose information.
I appreciate that, but my question to you, Mr. Lambert, is do you think the information provided or contained in Exhibit 32 should have been provided to the takeover contractor, Cortec, at the time of the bid?
You're asking me to make an educated presentation. If they, being Parsons and group in the Guam Transportation Group, feels that it's important, then I believe they would share. I don't know of any. I'm not in any of the course that I've been here as a director. I've seen any action to the contrary. That's withhold information. I've never seen that.
Okay.
So the answer to your question is: if this is important, yes, I believe they would share it.
It should be shared.
Should be shared. Yes.
Okay. Do you think it's important?
Well, apparently it was important to Mr. Ho. Again, I'm not an expert, but if he thinks it's important, then yes.
As a director, do you have an opinion? Director of DPW, do you have an opinion on the importance of this document, Exhibit 32?
As a director, yes. If there is a weight limitation, there are, to me, the things that are, I'm not sure why, and I certainly will look into it, is there's got to be posted signs, and we got to post the signs. If there's a weight limitation on the bridge, which obviously there's got to be a weight limitation on the bridge, it's a temporary bridge. So what would those weight limitations be? Again, having been a participant in a different bridge, that's the things that we dealt with.
I think you're talking about, could you be referring to the little bridge near Gorkha?
Yes.
That one that's dilapidated and
that's right.
Almost falling into the creek?
That's the one I'm referring to.
Actually seen.
And we did put a
sign,
yes.
So you understand the importance of load?
Sure.
Because Shell had trucks
that's right.
Running through those.
That's correct.
Just, if I could, you said there's a posted sign on that bridge, because that bridge is not as traversed as... No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't know, Mr. Brook, if that sign still exists. I know that was a sign that needed to be posted.
And was there a? My question was there a sign posted?
Yeah, this is so long ago.
Okay.
But I kind of recall having to post it ourselves or DPW put it up. There
when
was
you
a
say
sign.
Ourselves, you mean your shell posting some kind
Correct.
Of. Weight limitation.
That's right.
And to the best of your recollection, if it was Shell, you did it because?
Because that's what we were instructed to put up. Because we were using the bridge. We're basically the main users of that bridge, and we were aside from Dietrich, we were the main heavy load users of that bridge.
Do you recall what the weight limitation was, by chance? I'm just curious.
No, it's either 5 or 10 tons.
Okay.
But it was small.
It was small, yes.
So, may I?
I apologize for interrupting.
No.
I just wanted to
since
it was fresh.
You can interrupt any time. I will represent to you that I heard back from Vertex, Sam Reed, the takeover consultant, that this Exhibit 32... I asked him if that was provided to Vertex and for the takeover contract to bid it out. I will represent to you that he responded to me almost midnight last night.
I object.
Basis of the objection, Ms. Gill?
Basically, she's testifying for Mr. Reed.
Do you have a question for the
let me finish my question, and perhaps he can make his objection.
Okay, but I'm going to have to sustain the objection because you were represented.
Okay.
If you have a question for Mr. Leon Guerrero concerning that issue, please ask it.
All right.
This day.
No problem. I have an email here, and it's marked Exhibit 78, and I'll pass it around. I don't know if we want to clip it so that it doesn't get messed up.
Can you show that, Mr. Keeler?
Yeah, I will do that.
Two.
It's just simply a statement from Mr. Reed saying he hadn't previously received it. It speaks for itself.
Well, if I may respond to that, I mean, I'm happy to call Mr. Sterling from downstairs or upstairs to authenticate this. I just want to make the point, and I was hoping to avoid this. It makes it a lot faster.
Okay, well, I'm going to allow it, but if you're going to ask a question about this exhibit, please ask it then.
No objection? May I proceed?
Yeah, please proceed.
All right. Please review Exhibit 78. It's an email. The bottom is an email I wrote to Sam Lee, who is the for Vertex, copy of Mr. Sterling.
Yeah.
And it attaches the email that exhibit, which is basically the picture of Exhibit 32. You see that? Okay? So, Mr. I was representing the aliens, and now I don't have to represent the subject. He says, I have not previously received this correspondence that passed along to Cortez. So, I guess I wanted to confirm whether if you knew DPW had provided this to Cortez.
As I said, I wasn't involved in the discussions after Cortez indicated that they were going to participate.
I'm talking about pre-bid.
Pre-bid.
Yeah, before bidding. Was this provided to them before bidding?
To, no, I don't know.
Okay. You don't know or no?
I don't know.
Who would know?
The purchasing or the
okay.
Procurement, sorry, the procurement.
And who at procurement?
It would be led by Michael Lennon.
Yeah.
And involved with that would be
okay. How about Mr. Keeler?
Mr. Keeler.
Anyone else?
Whoever they use in port, but those are the three guys that they go to.
How about
Jeff Wilson also.
How about Mr. Benaventi?
Yes, for after that. You're asking to pre-bid and...
Okay, so they would be. All right. And this was, as you can see, the communications was in June 8th to June 9th. So this is before Coronda was terminated. Do you know if it was ever provided to Coronda?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Do you think it should have been provided to Coronda?
I suppose. Can I say something? This is all relatively new to me. My understanding is that we, for methods, means and methods, is that the correct state term? Means and methods. As far as means and methods, we information is that is important. And other information, if there's new discovery, we would, as indicated earlier, we would make the accommodations. But we would not make recommendations on how to proceed because the government doesn't want to be held liable for saying this is the way you should proceed and something should be mistaken or some catastrophic event occurred.
We're aware of that.
Okay, please proceed, Ms. Tang.
Thank you. Mr. Leonberg, I know that you came into office in early January this year, so procurement basically had been completed by that time. Did you have occasion to, or were you involved in any meetings or review documents regarding the earlier, the other procurement documents relating to this? When I say procurement, I mean like the bid, the certifications as required. Were you involved, or have you had a chance to review those?
No. I was not involved in the procurement, obviously, but and I had not looked at the procurement documents.
You have not reviewed it?
No.
Okay. When you came on board on January, let's say it's January 1, let's say, for, I don't know what Monday is, but let's say just January 1, 2015. Did you, and this appears to be one of the first actions you took was to get involved in the NTP?
Yes, sir.
Right. And issue the NTP. And prior to issuing that, did you have any briefing on this project?
A little. I understood that the contract was signed earlier. Don't remember that. They may have given me a date or a month. I understood that there was a building permit was also obtained. And as to why it took from then to January, they did give me that. To be honest with you, I don't remember what that is. But it seemed logical, and so I was kind of excited that this is a contract that we're going to, that I'm going to actually execute and see come to fruition because it was a needed contract. A needed project, sorry.
Okay. So when you say, after you said reference building permit, it was then to now January. I'm sorry, I kind of missed what you were.
You stated earlier during your discussions or during your opening arguments that there was an issue between, and Tom obviously addressed that as well, between the notice of intent to award and the notice to proceed.
Oh, I see. You're talking about that time period, the notice
right.
of intent to award and the NTP. Okay. That, thank you for that clarification. So, are you familiar with the process generally of how a project is let? That's the term says you, right? Let a project. I've seen that in a lot of correspondence and emails, so in documents. So, or to bid out a project.
Yes.
And so you're familiar with the process?
We've not done too many with the Federal Highway side.
Mm-hmm.
The standards are a little higher. We've done a few on the vertical side. And a couple on the local side.
So before you send out the invitation to bid, which is what's published, right?
Sure.
That's called the advertisement, correct?
Correct.
Okay. The department, under its own right-of-way manual, required that it obtain all right-of-ways, correct?
That's correct, especially for Federal Highway projects.
Why is that?
Federal Highway projects will not fund Federal Highway roads unless we have complete right-of-way access.
When you say they will not fund, you mean they will not obligate their funds?
The difference between obligation.
Okay, I don't mean to. It's not a trick question. So my understanding of it, there's a big pot of money that's available to Guam in the region, Saipan, American Samoa. Okay?
Yes.
And there may be other people, other islands, but that's the one that comes to mind. And you have to, if you don't use it, it goes back into a pot. Is that?
No.
No? Okay.
It sticks with that.
It sticks with you. Okay. So, but to for a project to get funded, you have to provide certain documents, and that's what, do certain things, correct?
Correct.
Can you just briefly describe that? I don't need every agreement, but let's, with respect to right-of-ways.
Well, right-of-ways, we have to have either ownership of the road or have permanent easement, permanent easements are only, and I could be wrong with this, but permanent easements are only accepted if the owner is the government. We don't take permanent, we don't accept, or the Federal Highway, again, I could be wrong, but my understanding is the Federal Highway will not accept a permanent easement from a private owner.
Right. And so in this case, and the lot in question that I'm talking about is 150-R3-1. Right, RW.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll call that the
Could you repeat that again, Ms. Tang?
150-R3-1R/W.
Okay.
So I'll call that lot 150 for ease of reference. Okay? So, or the right-of-way lot. So the right-of-way lot was required for the PIWA project because part of the bridge will be built on lot 150, correct?
My understanding was that it took us 2 years to condemn the property, so it's now, it was the government bonds,
mm-hmm.
and it was done. That was my understanding.
Okay, I'm sorry. So it didn't belong to government bonds, it belonged to Ignacio Cruz, correct?
Yeah, well, I know that Cruz is Mr. Cruz is contesting that. And has been, and I'm not sure where they're at, but for all practical purposes, my understanding is that we own the property.
Today. Okay.
Back in January, we owned the property.
Okay.
And before that, I don't know when it was filed.
Yeah.
Yes. So that property that the Billy and the PIWA bridges are going to be built on are all the rights of way issues were resolved.
I see. And with respect to this property, isn't it true that part of the PIWA bridge, the edge, there's going to be a bioswell and there's some abutments and other bridge parts that will sit on this new right-of-way?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay, that's fine. But it was necessary for this project. And
the right-of-way...
Right, and so before you can advertise, you have to. What do you have? Does the government, to fulfill the rules and regs, there are many, does it have to own the right of way?
Again, there are different stages in procurement. We today have procured A&E services, design services, just for an example, Tejan Parkway Park, phase two. We do not have rights of way. We are in the process of, we have a plan to claim the land or to get the rights of ways, but we already have hired the architect and for design purposes. So, again, different portions of the procurement is different, but before we actually begin construction, it's my understanding that the Federal Highway will not proceed unless we get rights of way, or it's examined.
Okay, so when you say will not proceed unless you get it, meaning you buy it or acquire it, or you condemn it?
Or have permanent easements.
All right. And then you said, or is imminent. You mean you're imminent, like I-M-I-N-E-T.
Like it's coming.
It's coming, okay.
Yes.
Not imminent to me. Okay, so it's imminent. And what do you mean by that?
Well, using the Tejan Parkway as for an example, we don't own all the rights away, and we need to acquire property to build the parkway. So we do have design services. We have... I'm not even sure what percentage for the law.
Okay, so I specifically want to just focus on our case, and I understand you're using it as an analogy, but I think we need to, just need to clarify this. The bid, the invitation for bid was, had states, and I don't know when it was advertised, but it says that
the submission of bonds were due on December 3rd on the invitation to bid. Okay? December 3rd, 2013 for this project. Now, based on your understanding of the process, so obviously by the time this is in the invitation to bid is published, because December 3rd is the earliest date, then you would have had to obtain a right-of-way for the imminent, before the advertisement. Is that your understanding?
Not for then. I don't know, Ms. Tang. I really don't know. I'm presuming that you make decisions as you go along,
right,
and you increase your standards or you change your standards, as they call it. I don't know. I really don't know what happened in 2013.
Can we just assume the law is the same? The rules are the same?
If the law were the same today, existing today,
yeah,
and me speaking to Federal Highway Representative Rochelle, that would be a requirement.
Okay. And are you aware that Mr. Dominguez, in his certification regarding the acquisition of right-of-way that was dated December 2nd, 2012, represented that he would obtain lot 150 bought within 60 days of December 2nd, 2012. Were you aware of that?
No, no.
Okay. And to your knowledge, did DPW obtain
lot 150? Can't Mr. Dominguez be the proper party to be responding to this? Mr. Leongaro has already advised that he wasn't familiar with the project prior to. He didn't review the bid specs and things of that nature after he came on board in January of this year. I don't see how he's able to be testifying to documentation prior to that.
Ms. Tang, on the objection?
I asked, he can tell me if he doesn't know, but I simply ask him, are you aware of whether the property was acquired, and he testified early, he knew approximately when, whether the property was acquired within 60 days as provided in that right-of-way certification. I think that's within his knowledge.
Would overrule the objection, and she's really inquiring as to what Mr. Leon Guerrero knows.
We only have 2 days for the proceedings.
And the purpose of that comment was for, Mr. Keeler?
The pertinency of this, I mean, how relative it is, how important it is.
We have overruled your objection, Mr. Keeler.
Thank you.
Do you have any other comments beyond that in terms of an objection to further?
No.
Okay. Your witness, Ms. Hay.
Thank you. Mr. DeAndre, do you recall the question? Would you like me to restate?
Please
restate. I'm sorry. Okay. So let me see if I can remember. All right. So Mr. Dominguez certified on December 2nd, 2013, that he would obtain lot 150 within 60 days of the date of the certification. Now we're talking 2013, just to be clear, that's the date of certification. Do you know whether DPW did in fact acquire lot 150 within 60 days of that certification? Okay. Is there anything, have you ever seen the declaration of taking for this case? For this property? Excuse me. Okay, so I'll mark this as exhibit
79.
Two numbers. 79. If you don't mind, Rose, can I just write 79?
Keeler, on exhibit number 79.
Yeah. The government would object. Again, this goes to an item that was raised for the first time on Monday in the hearing brief. The government hasn't had any opportunity to review its records with respect to this, hasn't had any opportunity to respond.
I'm sorry,
if I could just have one more. Okay. It was not in the notice of appeal. The notice of appeal goes for a termination of contract for convenience. This would be a new cause of action, and I'm not certain it would be for in front of the OPA or more properly filed with the Superior Court.
Is Tang on the objection?
I'm happy to address it. In
might help if I give you Exhibit 80, because it is Mr. Keeler's complaint.
Without an additional...
Okay, I mean, I was hoping to avoid the documents, but I hold in my hand a complaint to acquire property through eminent domain signed by Mr. Keeler. So it's no surprise to him, because he filed it and never produced it to us. I'm happy to provide a copy if Mr. Youngrell would like to see it.
Now, but his specific objection, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Keeler, is that this is not properly, or this was not part of your initial appeal that you made on behalf of Palando. Is that correct, Mr. Keeler?
That's correct.
Okay. And on that objection, what's your response?
The issue of the right-of-way is one of the issues that's been briefed in their rebuttal, in our response to the agency report, and their rebuttal. It's not as the fact that he's not disclosed information to us and now objects because we actually obtained it. It's not a basis for not allowing us to pursue this line of questioning. It's silly.
He's saying it wasn't part of your original appeal. Is that correct?
First of all, when we appealed on the basis of wrongful termination. We did not know, other than one or two of the deletions by Stanley, we didn't know all the other things that were happening. We made series of Sunshine Act requests and discovered additional documents. And we should not, and that is the source of all of these facts. And the fact that they wait so long to give us, and in this case didn't even give us documents, shouldn't prevent us from arguing this. An issue was clearly before that. The issue of the right-of-way is not a secret. And it's not a surprise.
Okay.
And it's part of our defense.
Well, in response to the objection, for the record, I will overrule the objection on the ground that page 3 of DPW's rebuttal, the comments of the agency report specifically raises the issue of the right-of-way as to whether or not Corando's argument that the 3-month period from DPW's March 11, 2014 notice of intent to award and the issuance of the notice of appeal was caused in part by the government's need to complete the acquisition for the right-of-way. On page 3 of the rebuttal, the Corando's response to the agency report, DPW specifically argues that that argument is wrong. And I will allow you, Ms. Tang, to put evidence to rebut that argument in this proceeding.
Thank you. Mr.
Lambert,
sorry to sidetrack, but the question is, so in December 2nd, 2013, Mr. Dominguez signed a certification, right-of-way certification, with the exception that he would acquire this particular lot, Lot 150, within 60 days of the December 2nd, 2013. And before you is Exhibit 79, which is a declaration of taking, filed with the Superior Court on September 11, 2014. Would you agree with me that the taking occurred on about September 11, 2014? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So, I guess I've answered my own question. It did not, DPW did not obtain the right-of-way within 60 days of December 2nd, 2013, as provided in the right-of-way certification signed by Mr. Dominguez.
Okay.
That's correct, right? Based on this. All right. And I'm sorry, thank you for that. He nodded his head, we need an audible response.
Okay.
Please, thank you. All right, so between when the bid was out, when was it? I keep on remembering. Okay, bid submission was January 15, 2014. Between that time and September 11, 2014, when the property was acquired, was the bidder, any bidder, informed, specifically Corando, that DPW didn't own one of the land land that it was going to build on?
Again, I don't know.
Would that have been sort of an important information to give to a bidder?
I'm going to answer your question two ways.
Okay.
One is that do I know of rights-of-way issues that the government has actually said we have rights-of-way, full rights-of-way, and had been incorrect? The answer is yes, I've seen that within my 11 months. Mm-hmm. Did that put the project at risk? The answer is no. And so, because there are other remedies, and we would look for that. And even if this is to my knowledge, even if there was a project and I state that there is no problem with the rights of way, and found out that there was a problem with the rights of way, and if it was company ABC that actually spent money and et cetera, the government still is held liable to making that company whole. I'm not understanding.
Okay, that's why I understand. Right. You know, maybe there's some confusion, but okay, let's focus in on June 2014. You saw yesterday there was a letter that
June
was delivered.
Yes,
yesterday there was a letter delivered to Tom Adder regarding. No, not yesterday. It was Monday. To Tom Adder regarding the driveway. Had you seen that?
No, unfortunately, I had. My son was sick, so I was.
Okay.
To...
Are you aware that?
I did talk to Senator Atta, and he did mention that there was something of concern here. And subsequently, I've talked to Tom Keeler, and he also said that...
Could you enlighten us? We're not privy to that letter. What is the... I don't know what is...
It's the attachment to my trial brief. I think it's the last attachment to my trial brief. It is a letter regarding the right-of-way and the acquisition, and we were concerned, because Senator Adda is the for a very long committee name, the Transportation Veterans. You know that in June, were you aware that in June 2014, they had just passed a law, Senator Adda, to condemn this property? Were you aware of that?
I'm aware that there was a law that was passed that allowed us to purchase this property. I'm not aware as to what the dates are,
yeah.
What the law...
I'm not going to hold you to it. But don't you think that it would have been... DPW is obligated to notify a contractor if a part of the project land was not available. Isn't that correct? Because it would have affected their work, especially if it's part of the bridge.
Can you just answer the question you just asked?
Sure.
No, I mean, we've done projects, again, in the past where we didn't own rights of way and have subsequently suffered from that. We've had issues where we built a road, and then the owner said, hey, you built it on my property, and I'm staking it out. Made a mistake. So I have done that.
Okay, but that's when you didn't know.
That's right.
Okay, but if DPW did know that it didn't acquire, then wouldn't it be DPW's responsibility to notify bidders in the bidding package that it didn't own it? That's the difference.
No, to contractors, again, if I wanted to build a road, say, do Hamburger Highway, which we don't own, we own only not a 10% of it, and if we want to pave it, it's at our risk. Again, it would be at our risk. The contractor, in this case, Nepo or Hawaiian Rock, we would contract with them, we would pay them, And again, the liability would fall on ours if people wanted to cut out the pieces of property that they own and block people from traversing over. That's our risk. So I'm not understanding that.
I don't mean to.
Yes, we probably for legal issues want to disclose information like that. But again, the risk is on the government, who is actually purchasing the contractor or the corporation to build us that asset.
So as long if Carondo didn't know what they did know won't hurt them, but if they did figure out and it impacted their working at that point, we'll deal with it. Is that the process?
No. Again, in this case, my understanding was, and I'm again, particularly to this particular case, I understood that the rights of way issues were already, there were no issues. It was not an issue with us. From January on, all the way until today, and I still, in my mind, don't see that as an issue. I see that, and that wasn't a reason for terminating our contract.
Okay. No, that I appreciate it. I mean, I understand. All right. Can you describe what is Stanley Consultant's role as a construction manager to DPW?
Yeah, there are eyes and ears at the construction site. They are to talk on a regular basis, I'm presuming, if not daily, then for sure be on a frequent basis on the progress of whatever project. And in this case, it would be for the people that they've actually were the construction managers for most of our construction projects down south.
I see. And part of their job was to review submittals, sign off on submittals, review documents, review the plans, respond to, and have basically all of the direct, as you put it, eyes and ears contact, direct contact with the contractor.
That's correct.
And then they would report back and whatever. But on the documents, like for all, for example, all the submittals, they sign off on it. It was only Stanley that signed off. Correct?
Yes.
All right. Do you recall that
they report to the PTG?
No, I understand. Okay. Yeah. But they are the contact and the authorized signers of the submittals, correct?
Yes.
All right. Is anybody else authorized to sign the submittals?
Yes, as I said, PTG. Mike can come in. Mike Lanning can come in. Jeff Wilson can look. He can look.
All right. But to your knowledge, did they?
No, I
didn't. Okay. If you did. But I don't recall seeing anything with their signature. Mr. Marlowe, what is your understanding of Jack Marlowe's role at Stanley?
He's the construction manager. He has, 20, 30-something years. He's got a lot of experience in road construction bridge.
Yeah, so he should be one of the best.
He should be knowledgeable, yes.
Oh, okay. And he was one of the principal contacts between Carondo and Stanley, correct?
He was the construction manager.
He was
for Stanley.
He was the chief.
That's right.
All right. He's the chief resident project director. I think that was his legal title. But he was for as you put it, eyes and ears and sign off on something. And he represented you are the contracting officer, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and he represented the contracting officer as well?
Yes.
All right. Do you recall how much, Stanley has a contract with DPW to work on this Billy Bay People Bay project, and it's the pursuant to a task order number 5. Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with the process, and I'm familiar that this is how we engage construction managers. Yes.
Do you recall if, and this, do you recall the amount of your contract?
No.
Would $760,000 be around the ballpark?
I really don't.
Okay. All right. Let me.
I recall reading it's in that.
It's in that range, right?
It's in that range.
I won't waste time on it. But it's in. We have an exhibit. I'm happy to pass it later and not waste time. But I remember $760,000.
Yeah.
That's just for Pigua and Billy Bay Bridge Construction Management Services.
That's
correct?
Okay.
And that, do you recall if they got paid?
They did. They get paid regularly whenever they get invoiced, yes.
For this project?
Yes.
Okay. And you have to certify, right?
Yes.
All right. Do you recall if Corrado got paid?
No, I don't recall, but I wouldn't. I do remember in earlier meetings asking for, this is after the NTP,
mm-hmm.
yeah, asking if they had any invoices.
Okay. Can I direct you to Exhibit 53, please?
Sure.
I'd like to object. Is Ms. Tang amending her appeal to include a cause for money damages?
No.
No, I think Ms. Tang on that objection.
I'm sorry. No, I mean, I'm not trying to establish that we are owed this money. I'm trying to show that the payment was approved, which is what I'm directing you to.
Yes.
And that was sort of made in our argument. I think we should deal with
it. I'm going to rule the objection and allow all the questions. Please proceed forward.
Thank you. So, Exhibit 53, Mr. Van Groen.
Yes, it's my signature.
It's your signature. John Hancock, July 6, 2015, correct?
That's correct.
And this is a form that is used, it's called voucher number 062615-331, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first application for payments for Toronto.
Okay.
53.
Yes.
Right, Exhibit 53. And it was for the gross amount of $217,074.84.
Okay.
Correct?
Yes.
All right. And Mr. Marlowe signed off on April 21st, 2015. And then project engineer from DPW, Ms. Benson. And then another engineer supervisor from DPW, Mr. Duarsan. Correct?
Cedro, yes.
Yeah. And then Joaquin Blas signed off as the certifying officer.
Okay.
All right. So by signing off, what are they saying?
That this is a valid invoice and we should pay it.
And the work was done?
Yes.
And it's complied with federal law and all the whatever regs that apply?
That's right.
Right. And did this money ever go to Corrado?
I would presume so. We'd have to go to DOA for processing that the money
would go. Would it surprise you to know that it actually got kicked back? It never got to Corrado?
Yes, I'd be surprised.
Who would be able to make that decision to stop a payment?
To stop a payment?
Yes, to Corrado.
I would be.
Anyone else?
Federal Highway, maybe. I guess Kim Bloss, who's got direct contacts with the administration, but he'd have to do it with my knowledge.
But you don't have any knowledge, so you wouldn't be able to do it.
No.
Okay, so Federal Highway, you're talking about Rochelle Takara.
Correct.
Anyone else?
Yes.
That's it.
How do we have a contract?
By signing off on this, I need to go to every page. They've earned this money, correct?
Yes.
As a follow-up, Mr. Leandro, there's no dispute in your mind that this money is owed to Corrado?
In my mind, no.
And unless you provided subsequent information?
That's correct. Okay.
As of the date you signed on July 6th, and you stated that they, to the best of your knowledge, they should have gotten it.
Correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Leandro, because of you do have extensive construction experience. Before NTP is issued,
extensive. No.
I'm not trying to make you an expert. I'm just saying you have lots of experience. Nothing more. What is your understanding of the risks to a contractor in terms of performing work before NTP is issued?
I don't. There have been some contracts, or sorry, some invoices for prior to the NTPs, but if there's a notice of intent to award, I don't see that there is there is always going to be risk, but I don't see that the risk. I think the government will make will try to make their contractors whole.
Contractually.
Yes.
I'm talking about contractually, not an equitable claim. Contractually, who takes the risk for working before NTP is issued?
That's a really good
question. Is it the contractor? If he spends money and does work, and the NTP is not issued.
Yeah, I you know, Ms. Tang, I don't see that as a I don't. I guess you can say it, you can view it that way, and you can look at it from a. But I don't see that as an issue. If work is performed, I'm obliged to pay it. I'm obliged to see that it gets paid.
And you're a.
I'm the contractor.
God-fearing, honest guy. But not everybody's like that. So, in agency, if I am a contractor and did some work and the NTP doesn't get issued for whatever reason, then contractually, isn't it true that I've taken the risk and I basically have to eat that unless the government wants to pay it?
Again, you're talking about something different. If we're talking about DPW,
yes.
I'm the director of DPW.
Right.
I would not let that happen.
And I respect that, and I believe that. But what I'm saying is, that would be if you and you're a good guy. But let's say somebody decides just don't want to do it. I just say no. Then what are my recourse? I have to file a Government Claims Act, right?
Yes, obviously you have that.
Yeah. Okay, and that could takes however long it takes.
Right.
Okay, so it is at the contractor's risk. If I don't have a nice guy like you sitting at DPW.
Okay, but today you have a nice guy like me.
Okay. Point taken. There were some discussions about building permits in the past, and I think, are you familiar with those issues, or should I? Okay. Okay, let me just get into it. So, you are aware that Carondo obtained its building permit in October 30. It was issued on October 30, 2014. Correct?
24.
Yeah. October 20, 30. 20? 20. So, that's Exhibit 22. Okay, let me just look, because I have so many dates in my head. Okay, it is. October 30, 2014.
Okay.
Exhibit 22. Okay.
Last year.
Yes. Okay. And that was before NTP, correct?
That's
right. All right. And after the permit is obtained, then Carondo, to your knowledge, do you know if they started processing the various planning plans and reports that they have to do before NTP between October 20 to December 2014?
I don't know what Carondo, but I can tell you what my expectation was when I signed at NTP.
Okay.
That they were preparing to because this was imminent.
Yeah.
And we did give them the NTP. So, again, I'm sure there was an explanation back then as to why it took from October or whatever time frame from the notice of award and the contract you'll sign back in June. As you said, and I wondered why it's taking so long. They gave me an explanation. I really don't remember what that explanation. It would seem logical, and I said, "Yeah, let's go ahead and do this."
Okay.
And so, in my mind, everything was in order until, I know I probably shouldn't be doing this, but until a little bit later on, I was, and I can't even tell you when. Carondo was indicating that they had issues with permits on their side, the logistical side, which is in the contracts, is it's on your dime, that's your responsibility. So I'm like, okay, let's just move forward.
Okay, but you don't know what activities occurred before NTP in terms of Carondo getting its lining up its. Meeting all the conditions of the permit.
Yeah.
Before you came on board.
I'm not aware of it, but I would presume that that's, again, they would it's a reasonable risk. There's a risk involved for them to go ahead and prepare for a project.
So you don't specifically know what they did or didn't do?
Correct.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, I'm just asking whether you know. So on January 1, you came in, and so they continue to process and plan and get their, you know, fulfill all the conditions of the building permit. Are you aware that they completed all of that on February 18, 2015, when they submitted, or they got approval for the HA, you may know this, CCP plan that's required by the Department of Agriculture?
No, I'm not.
You're not, okay. And you know what that plan is? Done with those types of plans?
No.
Okay, that's okay. No, I'm just asking you. So, would it surprise you to know that they were ready to go on about February 18, 2015, this year?
It would have been a welcome surprise. I was looking for progress, yes.
Okay. So no one told you that they got those approvals in February 2015?
You know, Ms. Tang, they may have told me, I just don't remember.
Okay.
But, again, for me, on my radar scope, I'm looking for progress. I'm looking for...
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I know that you testified that you've been involved in mostly vertical projects, and then that one bridge, is it one or more bridges? In connection with Shell, in
just
terms
that,
of a, as an owner, which is not an owner, a user, right? So you've never. Are you familiar with the process by which the process of planning involved in a bridge, in bridge work, bridge construction work?
I'm not an expert. I can tell you from my experience at that small bridge that I hired Tom Camacho, a structural engineer. I did a preliminary evaluation so that I could get the Department of Public Works to expedite their procurement and the need for that as far as a bridge was concerned. So we did a lot of work, and we didn't expect to get paid. We being Shell, they didn't expect to get paid. We just wanted to get the bridge secured. So, yes, there's certainly a lot of work done, more than I can understand or explain.
Right. And do you agree that it's different than, like, building a house where you get a building permit and then you go out and dig the foundation, like, the next day you can do that?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So that's it's not like a vertical. It's horizontal projects are just a real pain in so many levels.
Yeah, they require a different kind of engineering.
Right, and especially when it involves a navigable water, like, because it's a bay, then you have the issue of archaeology because it's on the beach, bones. It's just, and then you have possibly fauna and migratory bird issues. So there's so many issues that,
yes.
And you're laughing because you're thinking of the hens.
No, that was one of them, but the other one I was thinking was the Ely Bridge where we had snails.
Oh, okay. I didn't know about that. So, I mean, they are complicated.
Yes.
Okay. And a little delay, some delay in planning is, let me restate this. Sometimes contractors try to be aggressive when they get a job, just like you. I want to do a good job, move forward, get ahead. That's pretty common, right?
Sure.
When you do it with contractors. Everybody goes in there with a very positive outlook.
It's a different personality. Some are gung-ho, some are not, some are very...
Well, you try to be. and sometimes they're, aggressive, a little optimistic. That's not unusual. And because you're dealing with bridge projects, some delay is not, it's expected.
If the delay is warranted, then we give it to them, yes.
Right. But because of all the factors we talked about just earlier, I mean, there's going to be delays. The question is how long?
You know, I used to take that position until I saw what GPA did with the Gloria Nelson, and now I don't take that position anymore.
I'm
talking about change orders, I'm talking about extensions, etc.
Okay, I'm not familiar with the Gloria Nelson.
Well,
issue.
I am, but... So,
okay,
yes.
So actually, would it surprise you to know, and I'm going to direct you to exhibit... I should have it memorized by now, but I don't. 54. This is the chart that our office is based on the reports that DPW provided to us. It was also attached to one of our earlier files. I think it might be our opposition to DPW's summary judgment. I just don't remember the exact designation. So, just to, have you seen this report before, Mr. Bamborough?
I can't say that I have.
Okay. So, let me just kind of summarize it for you. We made, as you know, several FOIA or Sunshine Act requests.
Mm-hmm.
One of the requests was for federal highway reports on projects, Guam transportation projects between 2000 and 2015. And specifically, we wanted reports detailing the delays on those projects. And we obtained them. And what we did, instead of filing all, 60 or 100 of them, we summarized them for you.
Okay.
And the bridges projects, if you look at the second column from the right, it says bridge project. So the first, it says Y, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, bridge project. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. First 9 projects from the list are bridge projects. Okay? And if you look at the fourth column from the left, that tells you the original term of the contract.
Original cost.
Am I just miscounting? 1, 2, 3, 4. Fourth column from the left.
There's
original length. So that's the number of days the contract called for.
Yep.
And then this next following column, it says revised length approved. So that was approved by DPW.
Okay.
So... And then the total length, that's the actual project, I guess, term. Okay?
Okay.
Those are the dates. And then on the next column, it says total extensions approved. And then the final column, total delay. All right. So using the total delay column, so you can see those are the days that it was delayed. Of the delays range between 117 to 1,437 days. You see that?
See, negative 10 days.
Right, I'm sorry. I meant to say that. But that's not a... It's a million-dollar project. Okay. Yeah, you're right. But did any of these, to your knowledge, did any of them, are they in the process of being terminated? For instance, ELIC? For 1,437 days?
No. And I did address that when you asked me offhand what were the reason for the delays in this. This is where the snails were, and
mm-hmm.
I think there was other issues as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But, I mean, these contractors, there's some significant delays on these projects, right?
Yes.
All right. And these are bridge projects. I didn't even, the rest are road projects. So I think delays, unfortunately, are a normal part of construction, but bridge delays can be even more hairy than regular, like vertical projects.
Again, if there's an unforeseen circumstance or situation,
yeah.
And it warrants a time extension or an adjustment, we make that.
Okay, that's fair. All right. So, have you ever seen a summary like this showing the delays on the bridge or road project before, presented in this fashion? Does this information surprise you, the delays on the project?
No. Again, You alluded to the 1,400, and I am aware of that.
How about the other one? There's a 400.
I'm not even aware of the minus 10. I don't know what they did right. I'm kind of interested to find out, though.
How about the 449 days that's pending? The route 1-8 and again in group. I think that's...
I'm conflicted out of that, so I couldn't address that.
Right, no, that's fine. I'm just saying, are you aware there's 449 days?
I'm aware that it's way to do, yes.
Okay, that's all I'm asking. I'm not asking anything about the project. All right. So, submittal process. Can we talk about that for a while?
Submittal.
Yeah, submittals.
Okay.
All right.
Information submittals. Request for submittals.
Let me just see. Shall I proceed or?
Yeah, I think we can. Okay. We can proceed for another 10 minutes. Just don't have to wrap it. Break.
That's fine. Let's try to get as much done as well. I'm happy to do that. If that's your pleasure. Okay. Proceed.
Proceed, please.
Okay. The submittal process. You're familiar with the review and submittal process of DPW Federal Highway Project?
I'm familiar, yes.
Can you describe it to me?
Are you referring to the request for information?
Submittal. Okay, let me be more specific. If I send a submittal and say, you know, I want you to approve, DPW to approve, in this case, Stanley, to approve my phasing plan, all right? So I submit it, attach the plan, whatever other write-ups I have, and I submit it and follow it standard. So once that's submitted, tell me what happens to it afterwards.
In this case, you're asking for the phasing plan.
Which is a change, okay, just to be fair, it is a change in the, it's an alternate phasing plan, so it's a change from the existing phasing plan into the contract.
Okay. In this case, mm-hmm. I remember sitting down in a meeting with Carondo
mm-hmm.
and with Stanley, and they were asked if you want to submit your revised phasing plan, you need to submit that, and you got to have all the documents as to why you would take this course of action. Again, I don't know what. I'm not an engineer, so I wouldn't know what they would require, what they were looking for.
Do you remember when this meeting occurred, or on about, if you recall? In March?
Maybe March, February, March, time frame.
All right.
I don't remember.
Okay. But it was after MTP, right?
Yes, that's right.
And during this, who was at this meeting?
I had a couple of meetings with Carondo. This meeting we had Isidro, we had the two guys from DPW, we had Jack, Marlo
okay.
from Stanley, we had Mr. Kim, and he brought a couple of his engineers, I don't remember who they were.
Okay. So your consultants were there?
Yes, my consultant.
Was Mr. Keeler there? If you recall.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I presume he was.
Okay. And do you recall, so a submittal comes in, and I know you're talking about it, but I want to just get that question answered. Describe the process of the review. In this case, we're using the alternative review plan.
If the submittal is complete, and then our CM will look at it and say this is an order for whatever they're asking for, whether it be approval of a plan, an extension, additional costs, then it'll go to our PMT or the PTG group, which would be Parsons or PV, whoever's been assigned to that project, and they'll look at that and they'll agree. They'll consult with the CM, in this case Jeff Marlowe, and if it's okay, then it gets presented and they prepare the submittal for my approval.
Okay.
And it moves.
And so, well, how do you approve it?
I prepare a document for me to approve in terms of.
Well, you're talking about a change order.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I understand that. So when I say just a submittal review. That doesn't result in a change order. So just a review. Are you familiar with that process?
On the outside, yes. But not can I explain to you what the process is? No.
Okay, that's okay. I'm going to direct you to...
In other words, is it done? Yes.
All right. I don't know if you have Exhibit 60. Okay, can I have Exhibit 68? I'm going to direct you to Exhibit 68 just to make it easier. And I have the exhibit because it's actually the rule. You're familiar with the SCRs, the Supplemental Contract Requirements, right? That's what it stands for.
Exhibit?
It's 68.
Okay. So, on Exhibit 68, Mr. Keeler?
No objections.
Well, please proceed, Ms. Tang.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes.
All right. Exhibit 68, page 2. Of Exhibit 68. And the section, you're familiar with that, this is part of the bid documents, right? These are supplemental condition requirements.
Okay.
And they pretty much go with every contract that's bid out. And they just add different things, but these are pretty basic. So I want to direct your attention to the section on page 2, it's section 104.03, subsection 3. Subsection 3. You see that?
Contract.
And it's highlighted, I think.
Yeah. You
it's
want
contract,
to read it?
Yeah. Is it highlighted?
Yes.
No. Okay.
The document speaks for itself. He doesn't have to read
okay.
it today.
Do you agree that the submittal process for you is 30 days? Okay, so when the submittal goes through, you know, goes to, in this case, the CM, and then the CM reviews it, comes back, and maybe Toronto, in this case, has additional documents or response, they send it back. And then if it gets approved, then it's a round trip, basically 30 days.
Okay.
Does that sound correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's basically what this said. Okay. And so you know what, maybe this is a good time to pause, because the next one's going to take more than 2 minutes.
All right, we're going to break for lunch and return at 1:30.
Okay.
Mr. Leon Guerrero, as you're still a witness, we'll be taking the witness stand again. I'm going to basically instruct you not to discuss your testimony with any of the parties until it's concluded. And we'll see you back here at 1:30, and we're off the record at 12:40. Thank you.